Hi, this is Mike Ferris, a Nebraskan residing in Ireland. Welcome to the Life of Augustus. I've been listening to the Life of Caesar podcast ever since I heard Ray guest on a rather raucous Star Trek podcast back in 2012. He said his Aussie co-host on the Life of Caesar favored a similar style, so I had to check that shit out. So, I've been living most of this past decade with both Cam and Ray in my earholes, reminding me of my love of Neil Diamond tunes, David Lee Roth era Van Halen, and of course Toto, while teaching me all about history. I mean, who else is going to tell you how many asses are in a dinar? That's a lot of ass.
Great ass!
Does our language get a bit blue? Yeah. Stop being a snowflake. Listen, learn, love it, lick it, get educated. Cam and Ray rock.
It's Augustus episode 91, woo. Raymondo.
Hey, it's hour three. I'm sure everything's going to be fine.
Fine. Yeah. Nothing could possibly go wrong in hour three.
Right.
Before we get into it, let me give a plug once again for our Renaissance series, the Renaissance Times. We're talking about the rise of Christianity and the Visigoth sacking of Rome leading to the Dark Ages, and then we'll pick it up again after the Dark Ages when, with the humanists and science and the Enlightenment and the arts and all those things. We're going to talk about Leonardo and Michelangelo and Machiavelli and Shakespeare even we'll probably get up to. We're going to talk about why the Renaissance was so important. The great artists, the great thinkers, the humanists,
besides
the scientists, Galileo.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, they're the people who came before us, without whom we would not
be here. Standing on their shoulders. Right.
The bullshit filter, we're doing the war on drugs. Come and learn about the history of drugs and the history of the war on drugs. For a buck a month, I've got to point that out too. I forgot to mention that earlier. It's we've got a new subscription level for the bullshit filter. A buck a month.
Yeah.
Like,
come
seriously.
On.
For another three, you get another 3 hours of Ray and Cam in your ear holes every month.
You know you want
for
it.
A buck.
You know you want it.
Oh, you so want it.
And if nothing else, it'll help you go to sleep. What?
If you didn't want it, why are you dressed like that? Getting drunk in public. You know you want it.
And for those of you who are still subscribing to The Alexander Show, please contact Cam.
Unless you just you just started.
Right, yeah, please,
and
not yet.
Halfway through it, stay subscribed.
When you finish.
Subscribe to the other ones as well, but when you finish, contact me.
Yeah.
All right, back to last episode, Ray, we were talking about what a nice guy Augustus was, how he's being very moderate,
right.
He's not being extravagant. Yes, he bought a bunch of houses in the Palatine Hill and put a rope around it and said, this is mine.
That's just security, good security.
Simple furnishing, he eats simply, he dresses simply. He is a man of the people. He likes games. He likes parties, but they're simple. He likes playing pranks on people. He's a joker.
He's a space
cowboy. And he
likes
having sex with young virgins.
Yeah.
Was the other thing.
Yeah.
But we talked about, remember the hunchback joke? He was made a joke about a hunchback. I wanted to point out that by the standards of the day, jokes about people's deformities were okay.
Right.
People weren't delicate snowflakes back then. You could make jokes about their deformities. They went, good one. Good one, Augustus. Yeah. But I was thinking, researching this, you remember, like, back in the day, some of the stuff that people used to say about each other. Do you remember some of Cicero's speeches about Mark Antony, the Philippics?
Vaguely. Give me an example.
I looked up one. Cicero, this is when he was in full swing trying to take down Mark Antony,
right.
And he was on Octavian's side.
Right.
He says, let us speak rather of his meaner descriptions of worthlessness. You, with those jaws of yours, with those sides of yours, and that strength of body suited to a gladiator, drank such quantities of wine at the marriage of Hippia that you were forced to vomit the next day in the sight of the Roman people.
Ugh.
Oh, action disgraceful, not merely to see, but even to hear of. If this had happened to you at supper, amid those vast drinking cups of yours, who would not have thought it scandalous? But in an assembly of the Roman people, a man holding public office, a master of the horse, to whom it would have been disgraceful even to belch, vomiting filled his own bosom and the whole tribunal with fragments of what he had been eating, reeking with wine.
I got the heebie-jeebies now.
I remember this was when Caesar was off, I don't know, fighting a civil war somewhere, I think, and he left Antony in charge of Rome, and Antony was just drunk, vomiting all over himself in the middle of the forum in the Senate House, just like, jeez. He was a class act, Mark Antony.
Yeah, well, you clown act. Anyway, but yeah.
Now, we were pointing out in the last episode that he was very moderate. He was never cruel.
Yeah.
Augustus, but of course in his younger days as a triumvir, he was much more brutal, as we will sort of remind people, we'll go into some of the stories. But in his older days, he didn't parade or abuse his power like he had done when he was young. He was also happy to be the butt of some jokes, but not to be the butt of butt-fuck jokes.
Well, there's a fine line.
You remember back in the day...
Mm-hmm.
Mark Antony and his brother Lucius claimed that Augustus had let Julius Caesar and her Tyrus butt fuck him in order to get his start in life. That's why he was the chosen one, because he had let Julius and her Tyrus, Aulus Hirtius, butt fuck him, I think was the story. So he's like, listen, I'm happy to be the butt of some jokes, but I don't want to be the butt of butt fuck jokes.
I draw the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not a Greek after all. He is a Roman, and they, you know, they don't tolerate that kind of thing. So, no, it is out of bounds.
But in his younger days, he was anything about... let me start that again. In his younger days, he was about anything but moderation. Mm-hmm. Antony, when they had their falling out, Antony criticized him for fucking around, for holding lavish dinner parties when the rest of Rome was suffering under a famine. Mm-hmm. And for his love of expensive furniture.
Ooh.
And these are all of the things apart. Okay, now he's still fucking around, but everything else, he's deliberately re-engineered his persona, his public persona, I think on the basis of those criticisms in a large way. I think he was like, you know what, you're right. That was immature and childish and... I can't put myself in a position where people can criticize me. He wanted to put himself beyond criticism, I think, is a large part of securing his power, partly. I'm sure that there was, you know, there was that aspect to it. He didn't want to be... People are less likely to want to have you whacked if you're not being a dick. Right.
Yeah, that's how I live my life.
So,
yeah.
And then secondly, he also wanted to set the standard. Look, you know, yes, you're rich, I'm rich, we're all rich. But we don't need to be dicks about it because a lot of people aren't. So let's just, you know, be reasonable.
I think you bring up a really good point. As opposed to him just coming across as generally modest, I think you're absolutely right. I think he was specifically reacting to his earlier years, to those criticisms in his earlier years, and he was one by one knocking them out. The clothes, the furniture, the food, his behavior, that kind of stuff. I think he was just like, boom, boom, boom. Now, no one can ever accuse me of doing that again. Yes, I did it previously when I was younger, but it can no longer be an issue. So I think he was spending the second half of his life trying to make up for the first half of his life. Do you know how long it takes to cook asparagus?
Not long, but I was looking for a song. But I can't. It's all right. I was going to, boom, 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 let's get back to my room. I don't even know what that song's called. Is it called Boom? I thought it was Boom, Boom Room, but no, it's something else.
I do.
Asparagus. Yes, you want to tell the asparagus story.
Well, I just like the fact that he, again, and you wonder how much is sincere and how much is put on for public consumption, but he did not curse very often, and he liked homespun sayings as, like, as fast as you can cook asparagus, which supposedly drove Livia mad, but we don't even know the truth. But anyway, just for the heck of it, I looked it up. So that was about 15 to 20 minutes to cook an asparagus. So basically, when he's talking to someone, he's like, do this as fast as you can. But on the other hand, he'd always say things like, hurry slowly. So everything is relative, everything within its context. But again, he always had these little, he had these little sayings to try to teach people a lesson through those sayings.
Make haste slowly.
Yes.
Is my favorite interpretation of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also stories of him showing acts of generosity and kindness. Is a story that there was an old minor senator, someone he barely knew, who had gone blind.
Masturbation.
And, yeah, Augustus went to him and said, look, I told you to stop rubbing it out, man.
Pull back.
He wouldn't listen. He was going to commit suicide, this senator, and Augustus apparently went and sat at his bedside and talked him out of it.
Damn. Took time out of his schedule.
Yeah, so nice guy, Augustus. Now, Suetonius adds that other sayings he liked was better a safe commander than a bold.
Right.
That is done quickly enough, which is done well enough.
As long as you get it right, I don't care how long it takes you.
Yes. Yeah. He used to say, this is again coming from Suetonius, he used to say that a war or a battle should not be begun under any circumstances unless the hope of gain was clearly greater than the fear of loss. For he likened such as grasped at slight gains with no slight risk to those who fished with a golden hook, the loss of which, if it were carried off, could not be made good by any catch.
I like that one.
Don't take stupid risks.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. But he wasn't a macho man. I'm sorry, did you have more sayings?
No, go ahead.
He wasn't a macho man. He didn't walk around with his penis out. He was afraid of things. He was no Julius Caesar, if you will. Thunder and lightning frightened him. I think we probably mentioned this a long time ago. When he was in Spain, there was a torchbearer standing next to him who was struck by lightning and killed. And he remembered that for the rest of his life, obviously, so that scared him. I don't know if his piece of lucky sealskin was to protect him from the lightning, or was it just a general good luck piece, but he would have a lucky sealskin with him whenever he traveled. I hope he honestly didn't believe it would protect him from lightning, but what do I know?
It takes me back to Vegas. Yeah, I think the last time we told the sealskin story, there was actually a myth that seals never got struck by lightning or something, so the sealskin was supposed to protect him from lightning.
Okay.
Yeah, right. It's science. That's science.
Science,
that's,
bitch. All right.
Checks out.
Cool. All right. The good news was stuff like this was completely acceptable if you were an aristocrat. Like 50 Shades of Grey, if you're kinky and you're rich, it's cool. If you do it when you're trailer trash, people spit on you.
Well, this is the society that when Christianity came along a generation later went, yeah, human sacrifice and symbolic cannibalism, sure, why not? Let's get on board with that. That makes sense. They weren't exactly the most rational thinkers when it came to a lot of this stuff. I also read that if there was a lightning storm while he was home, he'd hide in the basement. And I thought maybe he thought Zeus was out to get him. maybe he thought he'd upset Zeus at some point, and you know, he was a little bit worried that the lightning was actually targeting him.
That makes sense.
He believed in omens. If there was a light rain at the start of a trip, that was a good omen, he thought. If his slaves put his shoes out the wrong way in the morning, wrong way around, that was a bad omen. He's fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad omen for the slave. Right.
I told you.
I'm the same way with my slaves, man. If they fuck up like that, seriously.
Bad juju, man.
You got one job. Put my shoes out the wrong way in the morning. That's it.
Know these people's names.
You're the shoe slave. That's right.
Know those names, put the shoes out, pointed the right way. How was that hard?
But Suetonius has other stories. Mm-hmm. He writes, as patron and master, he was no less strict than gracious and merciful. While he held many of his freedmen in high honour and close intimacy, such as Licinius, Calatus, and others, his slave Cosmas, Cosmo Kramer, I think he was, who spoke of him most insultingly, he merely put in irons.
Mm.
When he was walking with his steward Diomedes, and the latter, in a panic, got behind him when they were suddenly charged by a wild boar, he preferred to tax the man with timorousness rather than with anything more serious, and turned a matter of grave danger into a jest. Because after all, there was no evil intent.
Right.
But he forced Polus, a favourite freedman of his, to take his own life because he was convicted of adultery with Roman matrons.
Oh, shit.
And he broke the legs of his secretary Thallus for taking 500 denarii to betray the contents of a letter.
Yeah.
Because the tutor and attendants of his son Gaius took advantage of their master's illness to commit acts of arrogance and greed in his province, he had them thrown into a river with heavy weights about their necks.
That might sound cruel, but those things like that, I mean, because he's the head of the state, that's treason. It's not just being rude or lazy or trying to benefit. I mean, you're dealing with the people that run the country, so that is all treason, and you have to come down hard on that stuff.
So when his slave insulted him, he just put him in irons.
Right.
When his steward hid behind him to protect himself from a wild boar.
That's just panic and fear. He understood that.
Yeah. He made a joke about it. But, you know, when people are committing crimes, having sex with Roman matrons was a crime, taking a bribe to betray the contents of a private letter, what would you call that, just being a dick?
Yeah.
He had the guy's legs broken. I mean, I don't know, man. Throw the guy in jail. I mean, exile him. Break his legs, really? Anyway. And having the other guys executed, okay, but throwing them into a river with heavy weights around their neck seems like an extreme form of execution.
Well, you have to remember, during the time of Caesar or whatever, I mean, these guys would go out and they would go out to governorships and they would rape the land and the people would get all worked up and sometimes they'd revolt and then Rome has to send an army and put them down and it's just bad for business. It costs money. I mean, you can't go around and screw up in the provinces because it just looks bad for Rome and now it looks bad for this one man.
Yeah. So, you know, he could use force when he thought it was appropriate, but he doesn't seem to have done it without just cause. Right. Anyway.
At least in his mind, yeah.
Some other personal things Suetonius says about him. He avoided extreme hot and cold baths, which was sort of the trend with the Roman aristocrats at the time. Mm-hmm. But he scarred his skin from being too rough.
Ooh.
With the metal strigil that he used to scrape off the oil that they used as soap. And I know we've talked about this before, but just as a reminder, so instead of soap, they would be anointed with oil, and then he would scrape it off with a metal thing that looked like a ladle, I guess, a long ladle, scrape the oil off and really get in there. Yeah. Get in there. And he scarred his skin from being too rough.
Maybe he just liked a little bit of pain.
Yeah, who doesn't? Yeah. And he got sick a lot still. Like, we haven't talked about him having a big illness for a long time, except I think when Tiberius was going to Rhodes, mm-hmm. Augustus came down sick, and we weren't sure if it was real or a sympathy play. But he did get sick a lot. He had weaknesses in his hands and legs, especially his right hand, which sometimes made it difficult for him to hold a pen. And his old fella. So he had to use both hands. He had to get good, or just, you know, he had a slave do it. That's, well, he had a slave, one slave to put out his shoes in the morning and another slave to jerk him
off. But how many hours each day is this guy at a desk reading reports, writing reports, going over things? I mean, yeah, he is, you know, he's working himself. Not that life's not good for him, but he's working himself into a grave because he is just spending a decent amount of hours each day working, and there is no retirement for this guy. He can't stop, not until he's dead.
I don't know that he's reading and writing. He has scribes for that, mm-hmm. man. I mean, even Napoleon would sit in a bath while and dictate letters to... He had usually three secretaries working simultaneously, standing around his bath.
Right.
Napoleon would be dictating letters. They would read letters to him. He'd dictate replies and sign them. But, you know, he wasn't writing. I don't think Augustus would have been writing stuff himself either. Surely he had people to do that.
So we're going back to masturbation.
Yes. Okay. That's the main point of the story. Yeah.
Just checking.
You know, he also, as he gets older, he's doing less exercise than he used to.
Yeah.
Before the Battle of Actium, he would do the usual military exercises on horse and on foot. But after that, he switched to throwing and catching a ball, which is about the laziest form of exercise you can get in my book, apart from jerking off, which I think is, you know, it's where he ended up. After he got bored of throwing and catching a ball, he switched to getting a slave to throw and catch the ball while he watched. Oh, I'm getting exhausted just watching you throw that ball. In all seriousness, he would apparently take a run and then leap at the end. That was his exercise. Go for a run and then jump at the end of it. Oh, big jump, like a long jump.
Right.
This was apparently normal for a senator in his later years. He would take a ride on a horse. Right. And then take a run, which he'd end by leaping. This was normal exercise for your older guys.
Okay.
Just to wrap up this whole thing about his personal lifestyle, I mean, I think in everything he did in his later years, he was carefully cultivating the image of a normal, respectable Roman nobleman who did nothing to excess, and he went to great pains to make the Romans feel comfortable, mm-hmm. that he was just a normal guy who had their best interests at heart. He wasn't a madman. He wasn't an autocrat. He wasn't a king. He was just a servant of the state,
yeah.
trying to do his best to keep the ship steady. If only his successors had his temperament.
Yeah, we'd all be speaking Latin today. Maybe not. Maybe not.
Well, moving on the 1st of January 1 CE, or 754 ab urbe condita.
Right.
Caius Caesar became consul.
Woo! Finally, some young blood.
Where was he at the time, Ray?
He was slightly out of Rome. He was, I think he was in Parthia, trying to handle some bidne for Rome. If I could give that a little backstory, what we're about to talk about with Caius will make a lot more sense. So if we can jump back to the death of King Herod of Judea back in 5 BC, his sons Antipas and Archelaus, however you say his name, both came to Rome with their own copies of Herod's will to plead their case about why they deserve to inherit their father's kingdom. Augustus gets a council of senators together, and they conclude, and which includes Gaius, and they conclude that the will brought by Archelaus, which included a large amount of money to Augustus and his wife Olivia was the correct one. So the cities of Judea hear about this and they rise in revolt as the procurator there, Sabinus, garrisons the area to guard the tens of millions of sesterces promised to the emperor. The governor of Syria, Varus, is forced to bring the legions from Syria there to restore order because it's all getting out of hand. Now, the reason this is important is because when you come up to where we are today, King Phraates V of Parthia has seized Armenia with the help of Armenian nationalists, and he has expelled the Tigranes IV, the king there, which was he was installed by Rome. Now, some historians think that Phraates was only grabbing Armenia to use as a bargaining chip to secure the release of his two sons, who we've talked about in previous episodes, who are being held captive in Rome. Rome needs Armenia to be able to project its power into Asia, so they can't let this stand. Before Rome could deal with the Parthians in Armenia, they first have to get their Syrian legions available, which are still tied down in Palestine because of all the revolting that's going on. So in order to free up these legions, the kingdom of Judea was divided among the sons of Herod the Great. One half remained with Archelaus, while the other half was subdivided between his brothers Antipas and Philip. Stability is restored and everything is calmed down. But having settled matters in Judea, the emperor decided to deploy the army to Armenia to reestablish it as a Roman protectorate to show the Eastern world that everything on this side of the Euphrates will be dominated by Rome. And this is the backstory to what Caius, 19 or 21 years old, whatever he is now got to deal with this problem for Rome.
Mm. So 1 CE, when he becomes consul, he's not in Rome, obviously. He's on the border with Parthia, going out to deal with all of that. So his consular colleague, Lucius Aemilius Paulus, the husband of Augustus's granddaughter, Julia, the daughter of Agrippa and Julia the Elder, holds the ceremony by himself. Now, Paulus, by the way, is the grandson of Scribonia, Augustus's second wife, and the mother of Julia the Elder.
Wow.
And he's married to Julia the Younger.
Right.
So his wife is his cousin. And he actually wrote a song about it, which makes it okay.
Well, I've got a gal, she's as cute as she can be. She's a distant cousin, but she's not too distant with me. We kiss, all night. I squeeze is her tight. But we're kissing cousins, that's what makes it all right. Oh, I've got a gal.
See, so it's all right.
I need a shower now.
A kiss. If Elvis says it's okay, then it must be okay.
The king says it's okay.
Augustus liked to put relatives like Paulus into office. Obviously, keep your friends close. Keep your enemies closer. Yep. I'm not sure which ones the relatives were, but obviously he could trust them, he hoped, apart from his daughter and his granddaughter, as it turned out. He would the way he'd do this is he'd recommend them to the voters, but say, but you choose them only if you think they deserve the position. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for.
That's fair.
I'm just going to say, I think you should vote for them, but it's up to you.
Yeah.
I don't know of any instance where people went, we don't think so, Augustus. I think they, Augustus is a good guy. If he thinks this person should get the job, then, you know, I'm not going
to
argue.
But the optics looks good. I'm only recommending them to be considered. Thank you for your time.
Yes.
Please tell me you... I'm sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, please tell me read what happened to Paulus... and his wife later on.
I have, but we don't want to skip it.
Okay, cool.
Now, Caius, with his advisors over in Parthia, is doing well. Why do you think he's doing well, Ray?
Well, from what I was able to gather, again, he's got these older guys who are advising him. But the good news Rome at this time is that King Phraates V of Parthia is not really interested in war. They're not ready to go to war. Gaius, whether it's his idea or whether it's Augustus, continues to prepare for war. So Phraates is going to want to come to some kind of understanding. Look, we pushed it too far. We put our guy in charge in Armenia, but I don't really want to fight over it. So there's some wiggle room here for some kind of compromise.
Yeah, King Phraates doesn't really want to go up against the Roman Empire. I mean, come on, man. They haven't had it out for, 40 years, yeah. I guess, is the last time they had a war.
Yeah.
They know it's a bad idea. Even if there is no Agrippa. I think the last time they had to face down Rome, it was with Agrippa. Remember, they were causing trouble. I think it was the Parthians were causing trouble at some point, and Agrippa walked up and just stood there and gave him a stern look.
Yeah.
And they went, oh, sorry.
We'll be leaving now.
So Gaius and King Phraates they negotiate, they sign a peace deal, parade their armies in front of each other, have a lavish feast. Peace is confirmed, a Roman nominee is placed on the throne of Armenia, and everyone went home happy.
Nice. And this is sometime for now. I found all these different sources confusing. Supposedly this happened sometime in the year 2 AD, right?
I heard that happened in 1. Yeah. But the story doesn't end there, of course.
Right.
But in 2, that's when young Lucius Caesar, the younger of the two, is 19, and he goes to take his first provincial command in Spain.
Yeah, there's
Hispania.
Yeah, there's no war going on. Let him go there. It's pretty safe. He can get some military training, get some experience. This is going to be a good way to bloody this young man who can join his brother one day, and they can both rule Rome together once Augustus is no more. He goes through Gallia Narbonensis, stops at Massilia. There's a lot of welcoming ceremonies. There's a long line of petitioners. So he's going to hang out there and kind of show the flag for Augustus. Unfortunately, things don't go well.
Massilia is modern day Marseille.
Mm-hmm.
Australian band called the Angels, R.I.P. Doc died from cancer a couple of years ago. One of the great lead singers in Australian rock history in the 70s and the 80s, man. Marseille. Yeah, so while Lucius was in Marseille, he fell ill and died.
Oh.
19 years old.
Died on August 20th, 2 AD, just boom, boom, boom. So whatever hit him hard, hit him fast. And as you can imagine, Augustus is shaken to the core, having lost this young man.
Yeah, he was devastated.
Yeah.
But at least he still has one son still alive. Now, good news and bad news for Tiberius with this.
Right.
The Good news is Augustus now decides he is going to bring Tiberius back from exile.
Mm-hmm.
Probably at the urging of Livia. He's lost his youngest adopted son. So for whatever reason, though, he relents. He brings Tiberius back, but with a couple of stipulations.
Mm.
Number one, Caius, the heir apparent, needs to give his approval. Secondly, Tiberius needs to accept that when he comes back, he's just going to be a private citizen. No dignitas, no auctoritas,
right.
No command of an army. All he had to look forward to was getting old as a civilian.
But at least he can go see his friends again, and that's what his letters said that he wanted more than anything.
True. But the bad news is there's a rumor that he may have had Lucius killed.
Ooh.
So he might be in danger if that rumor takes hold.
Right.
Like, it was a little bit too convenient for him to take out one of the heirs apparent, one of those.
Right.
Heirs apparent. Anyway, he comes back. I think he needs to, again, make sure that he's not looking like he wants to take over.
Yeah.
He's going to be safe until Augustus dies and Caius takes power, because Caius might see him as a rival, you know, might decide he's going to take him out once daddy is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but either way, he's back in Rome, but just as a civilian.
Mm-hmm. So he was gone for just over 5 years?
I think at this stage, it's more like 7 or 8 years.
Maybe. All right. That's a long...
long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's got the dad bod. Yeah.
Meanwhile, scandals are rocking the party with Parthia as well.
Right.
With Caius and Parthia, I mean.
Now, I had read, correct me if I'm wrong, I had read that Phraates, the king of Parthia himself, told on Lollius. He told Caius that Lollius all this time had been working with him, had been taking bribes. Now, I wasn't sure if Phraates himself had told that or just word had gotten to Caius that as they were going on their journey that Lollius was bribing a lot of people, whether it was access to Caius or to get certain favors done. But all this comes to a head when Lollius's backdoor action, God, I can't believe I said that, is finally made known to Caius, who has got to be pissed off, hurt, feel betrayed, and very angry about this.
Yeah, he's accused of taking bribes from Eastern kings, and I'm not exactly sure what the Eastern kings got in return for the bribes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just better terms with the peace deal that they struck with Caius.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but either way, Candy Shop commits suicide. And in my notes, I've written that in inverted commas. A bit like in the Renaissance show recently, we had Arbogast helping Valentinian II commit suicide. But his hands were tied behind his back and he was shot twice in the head. Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know,
things
man.
Happen.
Yeah,
crazy.
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
Who can explain it?
I had read that Lollius, quote-unquote, drank poison, but you can obviously force poison down someone's throat.
Mm. And who was his great enemy?
Tiberius.
Tiberius.
Oh, shit. Oh, you're playing Tiberius. Columbo right now.
Well, I just before I go, one last question before I go. Ray,
who was his mortal enemy?
Who was his mortal enemy? Oh, I am sorry. I didn't. I'm sure it's nothing. I'm sure it's nothing. So, in a very short period of time, Lucius and Lollius, two of Tiberius' enemies, are mysteriously dead.
Ooh, suspicious.
And then a large number of the Armenians rebelled Rebelled? Rebelled. Rebelled. Not a large number of the Armenians rebelled.
Right.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Against the new king.
Yeah.
Which maybe wasn't so surprising because he was a Median, right. Not an Armenian.
Yeah.
You know, he was from closer to Persia, even though he was a Roman appointee. So the local aristocrats didn't like him. So in 3 CE, mm-hmm. Gaius leads an army into Armenia to suppress the uprising.
Kick ass and take name. And this is what the Romans have been waiting for. Let's teach these bastards a lesson. And at some point in 3 CE, he's laying siege to some unknown town. At least I couldn't find the name of it. When he is asked to personally negotiate with the rebel leader, Abaddon? Abba?
Yes.
Yeah. And so he's invited. This is the part where those old gray-haired generals around him should have stepped up. He's invited into the fortress to parlay. And as we all know with the rules of parlay, you can't hurt anybody. You can't kidnap anybody. But that's not exactly how it goes down.
Yeah, he walks into parlay, gets wounded. We don't know details, but it was bad, but didn't kill him. He didn't die straight away.
Right.
But a gut wound, I'm guessing, stabbed, gut wound, something like that. But they got him out. And over the next few months, his condition grew worse and his behavior started to become erratic. How erratic, I hear you ask?
I was banging 7 gram rocks. That's how I roll.
Winning. I had one gear. Go. Epic. Winning.
Are you bipolar?
I'm by winning. Win here. Win there. Win everywhere.
Charlie Sheen level erratic is how his behavior became.
I was going to call it. I was going to call it the Tiberius syndrome.
Yeah, well, he did write to Augustus asking for permission to retire from public life, just like Tiberius had done a decade earlier. He's like, I fucked up. This is my first command ever. I walk in, I get stabbed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fuck up. I'm no good. My brother's dead. My mother's in exile. I don't want this. I can't handle
it
anymore.
I can't do it.
Let me just retire.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's one thing coming from Tiberius. It was bad enough. But this kid's like 21. It's 22. It's really embarrassing to have him want to retire. But as it turned out, he didn't need to retire.
He was retired.
He was retired, yes. On the 21st of February, 4 CE, Caius dies.
Yeah. If it makes you feel any...
Oh, my God.
He's dead. The two pillars that Augustus was counting on are gone.
Here he is, age 67, Augustus.
Man.
Alone again. And he wrote a song about it.
When I was young, I never needed anyone. And making love was just for fun. Those days are gone.
Yeah, they are.
Living alone, I think of all the friends I've known. But when I dial the telephone, nobody's home.
All by myself, except for some virgins I have to deflower.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that is where we're going to leave it for today. Yeah. Augustus all alone.
Leave it on
all by himself.
Yeah, leave it on a low note.
What will happen next, Ray? Who knows? I haven't read ahead, and I hope you haven't either. I got no idea what's coming. No idea whatsoever.
And you like it.
Looking forward to being surprised. Yeah. That's how I like
it. Yeah.
Don't forget, the Hunter Clause.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
What did we learn today, Ray?
That
in episode 91.
Augustus was 99% the leader that every country would want, except for the deflowering. And as much as he, I don't know if he wants to or not, but he's only got these two kids to rely on. I don't think he trusts Augustus, but they're going to end up through, from what we can tell, legitimate ways, not through assassination, but they're now gone. Tiberius is back, but Augustus could not feel or be any lonely than he is right now.
Yeah, there he is. So it's 4 CE. Augustus is 67.
And it's all going to shit.
It's all going to shit. We'll be back. Don't forget to listen to the Renaissance series, renaissancetimes.com, and the Bullshit Filter, the War on Drugs. You can start there, or you can start with gun control, or you can go back to Siri. You can start wherever you want. Like, we'll be back in a couple of weeks, folks. Be good to each other, D-back, etc.
You're just happy to get to second base, usually, but...
I'm sure there should be a song to go with that, but I can't be bothered.
Second base, yeah!
Why he did this, I do not know.
I just got to second base with myself.
Well, speaking of all done...
That's science.
And there's always money in the banana stand.
So come and watch us lick it, love it, learn it.
I think that was one of Agrippa's sayings to this very... fucking day.
I need a stable of young men to come behind me.
And Rob, you better not use any of that.